Welcome to another episode of the Almost Awakened podcast. I am one half of the host of this show, Bill Real, and
I'm Mikkel Jones.
There we go. So, Mikkel, you said you're tired. What did you do last night?
I stayed up way too late and acted like I was a teenager.
Yeah, you know, we said this before. Just going to a party as an adult who's left a cult, you have to kind of like almost do the college years all over again for the first time, right? Like, you and I didn't really do this adult thing where you hang out with cool people and have a few drinks and laugh and dance, and we just didn't do that. So here we are, we're 40 years old, and we're like really cool 22-year-olds.
I mean, I think I'm cool. My body tells me I'm not.
Your body it took a beating last night, right?
More ways than one.
Yeah, well, okay, well, that's gonna take an explanation.
Not just the alcohol, but I'm so out of shape, and so my muscles are, I can barely move.
Yeah, there were times I was dancing, and, you know, somebody's like, oh, Bill, really, look at you're dancing, so cool. And in my head, I'm like, no way, I'm barely standing up. Like, I can't even do dancing and drinking at the same time without almost falling over. So I had a lot to drink. I probably drank, maybe we could talk a little bit about drinking today. So I had to drink probably like they're like wine cooler beers. It was like a seltzer or something with lime in it.
Yeah. Bitch beers.
There you go. Yeah, we call those bitch beers. And I had a Mike's Hard Lemonade, a black cherry. I had a couple other things. And then there was a guy there who kept giving me shots. And so I had three shots last night,
what?
Too.
What?
Oh, I have no idea. But one of them was the, I think, glazed donut vodka.
Ooh.
And it wasn't too bad. It didn't taste like a glazed donut, that's for sure. So I want to talk, maybe let's do that for a minute. Just talk about drinking. How have you navigated that? And then I'd love to share maybe some of my thoughts on how I've navigated it as adults. And I started drinking when I was 12, and then I stopped at 17 when I joined the religion, and then I essentially left that religion maybe, you know, 3 years ago mentally, and started to pick up drinking again. And you, I don't know that you ever drank ever until you deconstructed your faith, right?
Right.
So talk a little bit about getting into this thing called alcohol.
I was really scared at first, to be honest, because I didn't want to be one of those crazy drunk people. And so my first drink was a hot toddy that Kelty made me when I was sick. And I drank it and I was like, oh, this isn't too bad. You know, it didn't taste terrible. And then as I started interacting with other people and new friends and getting invited to, you know, go out to dinner or come over to somebody's house or whatever, there were drinks there. And I still was super cautious, one, because I'd seen other people get really wasted and pass out or get sick, and I didn't want any of that. And then, so I still just overly cautious, didn't take very many drinks. And then when Kelty and I almost broke up, I got sloshed. I think you remember that.
I think you broke world records on how much you drank that night.
Probably not, but it was a lot. And I didn't care. And I got really sick. And I don't remember much of the night. And so it's been this process of like trying to figure out where the line is. How many drinks can I have before I'm completely inebriated and I can't remember the night? And how many drinks can I have to where I feel really good and relaxed and having a great time? And I've even tried to see, can I not have anything to drink and go to a party and have a great time? And I can. I like both. I like not drinking anything and going to a party or interacting with people. But I also really like how alcohol makes me feel until I wake up the next morning.
Yeah, we have this thing I keep saying, alcohol is not your friend.
It's not.
No, and it feels great that night. It puts its arm around you and it says like, let's party, let's have some fun, you and me. And you're like enjoying your friendship with alcohol. And then you get up in the morning and then alcohol's like, ha ha, bitch, I just played you.
Yeah.
Oh, so the same kind of thing. I mean, having started drinking at 12, I had plenty of times where I got too crazy or I drank way too much and I was sick and throwing up. I remember one particular time I'm at my cousin's house and his parents were out of town. We threw a big party. So our friends are over. We had some boys and girls over that we didn't even know. And the party was just a blast. And at the end of the night, I'm gone. I cannot function. I can't even tell my body what to do. I go lay down in bed and I tell my friends, I'm going to throw up. And so my best friend, Carlos, he brings me a trash can and I grab the trash can with both hands, one on each side. But rather than throw up in the trash can, I then move the trash can 1 foot over to the right and then throw up on the floor. Like that's what my brain said was the right thing to do. And so as a kid, I had those chances to kind of have too much and to kind of ruin my night a little bit. And so now doing it as an adult, I've really not had a bad night yet in terms of drinking too much. But like you're saying, when I wake up in the morning sometimes, I recognize like, oh yeah, I probably could have drank a little less and feel a little better today. You and I haven't recorded much lately.
I know. What the hell, Bill?
Well, I've been out of town for two of the weekends. So over the last month.
You've been gone longer than that.
Well, no. I mean, I went to Phoenix, Arizona to watch a Browns game with my dad and my brother. And then I was in Ohio with my mom passing. And so I think over the course of the last 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, I have been out of town for two of those and then in town, I think, for three of them, if I'm not mistaken. But you know, now that I say that, I might have missed Sundays with being in Ohio.
Yeah, two with your mom and then one with the Browns.
And so people heard the episode. I talk about my mom's passing. You know, that's been hard, but it's been a strange thought. Like when my grandparents passed, I was sad. Like, oh, my grandma passed or oh, my grandpa passed. And I was sad. And you kind of think like, oh, when mom or dad pass, it'll be like that. And when my mom passed, it wasn't like that. It was something different. I didn't feel like I lost a piece of me with my grandparents. Like life's going to go on and I'm not going to be able to go see them anymore. But my life is essentially going on just as it did before they passed. And my mom's been different things to me at different time frames in my life. She was something to me when I was a kid growing up in our home. She was something else to me when I was a young adult. She was something else to me when I was an older adult. But you kind of hang on to, and there's those chimes again, you can kind of hang on to the idea that whatever my best moment was, my mom, I could hang on to kind of still being connected to that. As long as she was alive, like we're going over there for Thanksgiving or for Christmas when we lived back in Ohio. And it was way different than when I was a kid. And yet I was able to kind of hang on to part of what it was when it was a kid. And then when she passed, Mikkel, it was like you had to let go of your past. Your past was no longer in any way connected to you. Like there was a rope there and it just got severed. And you never get to go back to it. And so from now on, from that point forward, even though it already was different, you're now extremely aware that it's different than it will be different now than it was ever then. Like it's changed and it's changed forever. And you're intimately aware of that. But most of the time I'm dealing with it pretty well. And then sometimes it's like you're in a giant hole and there's no way to get out. And even if you got out, the world doesn't look the same.
I can't even imagine.
So that was the one thing. And for listeners, they can go back and listen to the episode I recorded kind of to talk about that and process that. My main thing there was just I wanted people to see how ugly this dying process can be and that we on this side of life, those of us who are almost awakened, that we can be a force for good for speaking up and hopefully changing this world to better reflect ways that we can handle those we love who are dying. What's been going on in your life over the last month?
Same old, nothing too exciting.
What are you and Kels working on? What is the big thing that's kind of cramping your guys' style, besides kids, by the way? What's the big thing cramping your guys' style right now?
Yeah, Kelsey's reading a book and she's been loving it. I haven't started it yet. I think, let me see if I can find it really quick. I think it's How to Unfuck Yourself. Is that a book?
I know my wife read a book titled Unfuck Yourself.
I'm pulling up my Audible right now.
I'd love to hear what you guys reading and what you're about ready to read.
She's reading Unfuck Yourself. I haven't read anything in a long time because my job is different right now, and so I don't have a commute that's more than like 8 minutes long, and so it's hard for me to get into a book. But I need to get back into listening or reading something. But what I'm working on is I just keep noticing, Bill, that I'm not as nice of a human being as I think I am. It's so interesting that I still somehow find ways to exclude people that are different than me. And I don't like that. I don't like that, whether that's intentional or unintentional. And oftentimes it's unintentional. But seeing that I still do that really bugs me.
We're all doing it though, right? Like there are, 8 billion people on this planet and you are excluding some. Some you can't help, right? Because they live geographically at some distance that makes it impossible to even know they exist.
Right.
Other people are deeply fanatical in their religion or their politics, and it doesn't interest you. Other people don't like the same activities. They prefer to listen to the music you don't, or eat the kinds of foods you don't want to be eating, and so you're just not going to be in those spaces with those people. And it's all in a way unintentional, and in a way some of it's intentional. Like we've talked about this before. We all get to pick the spaces we're in, and others will prefer to be in other kinds of spaces. And wherever it overlaps, there's a chance to share that space. And the more similarities we have with the person next to us, the more overlap there is, the more opportunity there is to be in their space. And when that overlap is small, whatever those reasons are, then exclusion is going to naturally happen. But I get it. Like no one wants to be excluded and no one wants to be seen as an excluder. And yet we're all doing it every single day.
I know. And so I'm just one, how do you be okay with it? Because I know how it feels to be on the other side, to be the one being excluded. And I hate feeling that way, but I also know that people have the right to invite or not invite and whoever they want. But at the same time, I think the intention behind it matters, if that makes sense. Like the intention behind not inviting someone, if it's out of malice or hate, then I think that matters more than if you just don't get along that great.
Yeah. In fact, I came over to your house, well, how long ago was it? Maybe 3 weeks ago. And was just trying to have a conversation with you where I usually am not emotional about this kind of stuff. I'm pretty level-headed and I kind of accept like however life is right now, that's just the way it is and we deal with it. And I'd just gotten back from my mom's whole situation and I just felt like there was some distance growing between you and I. And I came over, Amanda and I came over and we're sitting with you and Kelsey and just having a conversation about like, I feel this distance and I don't want it. Like I love you and care about you. Amanda and I love you and Kelsey. We care about you. We want these relationships to thrive for decades if we can nourish them and keep them strong. And so I'm sitting with you and I'm just saying like, hey, there's this distance and I don't know what it is, but it scares me and it hurts. And I've been pretty emotional the last few days kind of thinking about it. Because I want you in my life. And so as we sat and hashed that out, I mean, you're talking on your side of that conversation and saying like, yeah, like there are some things going on both between us and as well as just around our environment as we share space. And those things have put some little bit of tension there and it has caused a little bit of distance. And then there we are again, trying to work on that and get rid of it and get back to where we were. But you never really can get back to where you were because it's always moving, shifting, changing. New people come into your life. Old people leave your life. Like it never is the same. And so you try to recapture the magic of these relationships you have with people. And yet, to some extent, you can never exactly get what you had. So now you have to create something different that has the same feel or the same vibe or the same good times to it. And it's, man, it's just such a, being human is so fucking messy.
It is so fucking messy. But what I love about you and Amanda, Bill, is you will have a conversation with us about things that are messy and complicated and maybe not going the best. And I think vice versa, we've had several conversations about this is what I see going on, or this is what I'm feeling, and how do we navigate this, and how do we come out on the other side still being friends and still, you know, working on our own individual shit, but how can we work on the shit that's happening within the relationship? And I love that. I love interacting with people that are willing to do that.
Yeah, it really is it's the work of this side of life, is to just be honest and open and as transparent as you can.
Yeah, and I think it's like part of being a grown-up.
Yeah, absolutely. Is Kelsey liking the book?
She's loving it.
Yeah, Amanda loved it too, and Amanda felt like it was a you know, if she names like the big five books she's read in the last, whatever it is, 3 years, this is one of them. She really loved it, and she listened to most of it on a drive, I think it was to Vegas and back, and so she got about 4 hours of listening in, and she just loved the book, and it did a lot to kind of help her realize, like, we all have this shit. We have good friends, the Hersheys, and we were eating dinner with them last night, and Paul was talking about The Untethered Soul, which I think you read.
I didn't. Get into it. Oh, I read part of it.
Okay, well, I know Amanda and I read it. I thought it was you that recommended it to me, but there's a conversation in there about the roommate, and the roommate is just fucking things up, and the roommate is our ego inside of us. It's that shadow, and the ego is always trying to protect itself. It's always trying to protect the way it wants relationships to be, and it doesn't let you, your healthiest self, it doesn't let you run your own life. It tries to intervene at every single turn. And we were just talking about The Untethered Soul in that book and how helpful it was to them. They both really loved it and enjoyed it. You know, talking to Amanda about both The Untethered Soul and Unfuck Yourself, those books were big for her. The one I'm reading right now, Mikkel, and I recommend this, by the way, it seems like this is a subject we talk about a lot on this podcast, and I hope we get off into 1,000 other things and continually revisit this. But the idea of sex, I was listening to a podcast, and somebody recommended Sex at Dawn, and the book is about how sex evolved going back thousands and thousands and thousands of years to the present day, like how we developed societies with certain sexual dynamics and why they were developed that way. And then it went into lots of the primate species, the orangutans, the chimpanzees, the gorillas, the bonobos, all of these different primate families, and how they practice sexual dynamics within their own culture. And it seems strange to refer to an animal having a culture, but they do. Bonobos have sex with everybody. We always have this joke in our group, like it's us and the bonobos, and it's just making a joke about how the bonobos are the ones who have this sexual urge within them, and they actually go out and carry it out. They're having sex with all of each other, and there's no violence in this society. And I mean, no violence. There's not a single recorded instance of bonobos fighting each other or hurting each other. And there's also another, and I can't remember what the other primate species was, but they have absolute monogamy. They pick one partner and they stay with that partner for all forever and ever. And they also have no violence among them. And then all the rest of the primate families are, you know, they have a partner or like if it's the gorillas, the great apes, they have a, like a harem. So the silverback gorilla has, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 females. And then all the other boys, males who cannot challenge him, cannot have no chance to challenge him. They're out. They're gone. They have to go find some other place. And with the gorillas, as well as some of the other chimpanzees and the orangutans, there is violence among their group. And this book just went into like what works best, what doesn't work, why in Western culture are we monogamous? Let me tell you about other cultures where they're not monogamous. And they talk about, I didn't know this existed. There are dozens of these tribes that we have good information on about how they operate, and they operate their societies so different. One that stuck out was they allow their children to, like it's just permissible in their culture for the children to have sex with each other. I don't mean children like young, but I mean like 12, 14, 16. At that age, they're essentially free to go have sex with whoever they want. And there is special places set aside where they can meet up with others and go have sex. And it's completely aside from their parents being involved. And then,
interesting.
And they teach these people, they say, don't settle down. Don't find one person. And then there are other cultures where when they get married, there's a wedding ritual where the brother-in-law of the wife, I don't know how they framed it, but it was a relative comes in and these two people lay on a mat, the people getting married, they lay on a mat like opposite each other. So one's feet is by the other one's head and one's head by the other one's feet. And this family member comes in and lays down next to them and then tells them that they need to love each other until their last breath, but they also need to not be jealous of each other's lovers. And so there's this space in this culture that you're allowed to have extramarital relationships, but you still need to be dedicated and loyal and have integrity to this one relationship. And essentially they go through hundreds of these kinds of societies that have built their worlds different ways. And here I am in this Western ideology, and I thought inside me like, oh, this is how the whole world does it. The whole world teaches that we're expected to be with one partner and we're expected to do this and we're expected to do that. And I don't want the audience to get the wrong idea. Dan Savage coined the term monogamish. Have you heard that before?
I haven't.
So Dan Savage talks about the word monogamish, and he essentially says like there's lots of ways that people can live out their lives. And one form of non-monogamy is this idea that you can have like these really soft, light relationships. You're just kind of dipping your toes in the water of non-monogamy. Use the term monogamish. And what he means by monogamish is that you're in monogamy. You are in with one partner, but there is room in your relationship with your one partner to have some forms of intimacy and connection outside of that relationship. And for some, it's they have the ability to go have sex with someone else every once in a while. But I like the term. I worry that like a listener is going to go like, oh my gosh, Bill Reel's sleeping with other people. And just to set the record straight, I've never ever had sex with anyone besides my wife. I didn't even have sex before we got married with somebody else. And so, but for me, the term monogamish means, and I like it, I like the term, I'm with my wife. I'm married to her. I want to be with her until my last breath. We get along great. We fill each other in ways that I can't imagine anybody else would be able to. But I like the space to be able to connect with other people. At the party last night, I'm sitting and I'm holding hands with a person to my left and just having a beautiful conversation. And there was an intimacy there. And yet, in no way do I want to have sex with that person. And then somebody else came and sat down on my right, and I put my arm around them and I was running my fingers through their hair and rubbing their ear a little bit and rubbing the back of their neck. And again, I don't want to have sex with that person, but I enjoy, and my wife enjoys this, the opportunity to sit with others in this space of intimacy and maybe even a little bit of sensuality without there being sex. And what's helped all of this, I say all that to get to this point to say, reading things like Sex at Dawn, reading things like The Ethical Slut, or I think the other one was State of Affairs by Esther Perel, reading those books helped me understand that there's not, that the way we built this world maybe wasn't the best way in terms of individuals actually going out and being happy and fulfilled and having affirmation, that we built it this way so that groups could perpetuate, so that societies could maintain control of the masses. And now I'm learning like, oh, we didn't have to do it this way. We could do it something different. And lots of places all over the world, they are.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It is. What are your thoughts there? I'm not letting you off the hook.
It's interesting to me because, like you, you know, growing up, this construct was the only thing that I'd ever known and ever been taught. And so to see and to learn about cultures and societies that have functioned differently, it's fascinating. It makes me want to know more. And it for me, it makes me start questioning my beliefs, not because, you know, I want to go out and have sex with tons of different people, but because I think it's important to understand why you believe what you believe and to make a conscious decision to continue to believe that. But I think that it's really important at the same time to keep an open mind, because your belief may not be the most correct, for lack of a better term, or the best, to see that there are other ways to function that work, I think is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and there's so much judgment when we're stuck in a certain perspective or system to think anybody who does it differently is doing it wrong.
Right.
I can't pull it out of my head right now, but there was tons of data in the book about lesbian women, gay men, straight women, straight men, bisexuality. They said essentially the higher the sex drive a woman has, and again, this is the idea that we all come to be the way we are, and that the way we are is different than everyone else around us, and we also, again, have similarities and overlap. And that the higher a sex drive a female has, the more likely she has some degree of bisexuality to her.
Interesting.
And this went for lesbians, although lesbians operate more like heterosexual men, and this went for gay men as well, although they operate also more like heterosexual men, in that they are often more polarized. So for a woman who is a lesbian, she's a little less prone to bisexuality. Like a heterosexual man is usually either gay or either heterosexual, with some room on the spectrum for a small segment of people to be somewhere in between. But for lots of women, I can't remember what the percentage was, 60% or something of women report being some degree of bisexual, having attraction towards both genders.
Yeah, that does not surprise me at all.
Yeah. And so the higher the sex drive, the more likely they are that a heterosexual woman also has an interest in females. And there are 1,000 evolutionary mechanisms at place. And the thing that the book was really hitting on was this idea of, look, we built society this way. We did it because it perpetuated society. It gave control to the system over the masses. But that women really are very different from men. Again, generally, I'm not saying specifically and not as a stereotype, but just generally or collectively. And women need, because we're going back all the way, like whoever put sperm in them and had a baby, they needed that sperm donor to hang around and help them raise the child. And so over thousands and thousands and thousands of years of it being better for the child if the dad was around and the baby survived more often, and over thousands and thousands of years of evolution, that suddenly becomes something that evolution places in our mechanisms to create that same result. So over thousands of years, it essentially allowed that, you know, every woman suddenly has this urge within her to find the best provider, even if he's not the best looking. Like, women will go after, to some degree, wealth and stability over good looks and great personality. And that's evolutionarily programmed within them. Men, on the other hand, to perpetuate the species, their best bet is to just dump sperm all over the place, right? And and so men have this propensity to just want to have sex everywhere and to perpetuate their species. And so here are men and women just butting heads. And it's the reason there's this tension in relationships where one side wants to be a little more adventuresome and exploratory, and the other side wants more stability and consistency. And it's just fucked up, because us humans then put stories around all of that, because the other primates are doing it too. But within our species, we've now assigned stories and narratives to it, and it just complicates things. Plus, we're a more sentient species, and so we have all these extra mechanisms of how we think. And so here we are every day, just kind of being abrasive to the people we love in everything we do, with sexuality being kind of the most abrasive topic of all of them.
Well, in my next life, I think I'll just come back as a bonobo.
Female bonobos, by the way, they love the missionary position, and they make long gazes of eye contact when they're getting ready to have sex. The male bonobos like to do it doggy style. So just a little couple of facts there for our listeners. What else are you thinking about? What else are you interested in? Where do you want to go next? Kind of like maybe with interviews or things that are going on the podcast, like what else is going on in your life?
Yeah. So I was talking to somebody last night who, had a recommendation for, someone to be interviewed. And so they're going to reach out and kind of check with this other person to see how they feel. It's someone who does, EMDR, which is, rapid eye movement desensitization. It works really well for PTSD and other trauma. And so I think that would be really cool. And then I don't know. I'm open to suggestions. Bill, what are you thinking?
So I've got a friend who wrote a book about like rational thinking, like how to be more rational, how to be more logical and not to be swayed by when someone says like, oh, there was a knocking noise on the roof of the home, it must be aliens. And then you walk outside and you see a shooting star and you're like, yep, that was the alien ship. Like right. All of us do that kind of thing at times when we're trying to defend a belief. But most of the time in our life, we figure out like what's the most rational answer to us, which answer requires the least amount of conjecture. And that's the answer we go with. And, I've had conversations with him before, but I'd like to have him on and just help the listeners see like, look, you do it most of the time. Now on these few things where it feels really personal and connected to your identity, you tend to be less rational. And then to have a conversation maybe where people can begin to walk away going like, oh, he's right. Like, let me start thinking about these things the same way I do about the rest of my life. And then we can all kind of start going where the facts go and being more rational about what is right and what is wrong or what's responsible, what's irresponsible, what's true, what isn't true. Anyway, that's one of the things I'm kind of thinking about kind of doing here in the next few weeks.
Cool. That would be interesting. That would be really interesting.
I saved a baby. I'm kind of a hero.
I saw that. Like national news, Bill.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
I'm still waiting for like the CBS interview.
Well,
the Today Show.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm waiting for Ellen. I'm holding out for Ellen.
Oh,
I told her.
That would
I told
be
everybody
amazing.
Else no. And I was interviewed on A&E for a program. I think it's called First Call Responders. CNN interviewed me. ABC,
wow.
NBC, all of those places. It went national. It was in Croatia. It was in
what?
Finland. No, seriously, Croatia, Finland, Chicago, Detroit. It was all over our country. It was just crazy. A couple ladies came in with an infant that was probably 4 to 7 months old, just barely able to sit up. They put it up on our counter. Then they kind of ignored it. And I was coming from the front of the store towards where they were. I was about maybe 10 or 12 foot away. And I suddenly saw this baby. I could see it was unstable and I could see she wasn't paying attention. And within like an eighth of a second, I just made a decision in my head, like, I'm going to head that way. And so I started running towards the counter. And then the baby actually did topple over, going head first towards our concrete floor. And I got there just in time. I like got down like on my knees almost and just kind of swooped the baby up. And then I held on to the child for a couple of seconds, Mikkel, because I didn't want to give it back. And I was pretty shaken up. And I was literally in my head going like, I don't want to give you back to these people because they obviously aren't watching you closely. And I'm worried about what the rest of your life looks like.
Right.
But it worked out. We you know, the baby was okay. And
for now.
Yeah. And then these folks ended up leaving the store and who knows what happened to the baby after that.
That's crazy.
But yeah,
that
it was national.
So crazy.
People, and again, I'm joking about the hero thing. People are like, don't you feel like a hero? And I'm like, nah, heroes go into burning buildings. Heroes jump in front of trains. I didn't
See
put anything at risk.
Off.
Yeah, I didn't put anything at risk. I think to be a hero, you have to risk something. And all I did was just run for 2 seconds. It just worked out. I got there in the right amount of time. It was certainly a cool looking video, but all of us would have done it. Some of us would have gotten there sooner. And if you get there a half a second sooner, then there's not even a story. The kid's still on the counter.
Yeah.
And if you get there a half a second later, it's a whole nother kind of story. So
not a good one.
Just lucky to be in the right place at the right time. Anything else? What else are you thinking?
I don't know. I don't have a lot in my brain right now.
Yeah, and part of that I think is just due to all that we did last night. I had these things from the, you know, the baby and the my mom passing and stuff like that, the book I was reading that were on my mind. But yeah, outside of those things, like I just, life is good. I'm enjoying it. I'm having fun. I love my friends and just having a blast. So you have any ideas? So I'm going to put you in charge of next week. You have any ideas next week? Do you want to try to put this interview together?
I'll see what I can do to get it, put together, and I'll let you know. Otherwise, yeah, I'll plan on being in charge. I have no idea what we're talking about yet, but I will keep you posted.
Cool. Closing song today. You have any ideas? Is there some song maybe you're listening to?
New song. No. Like I really have not done anything since you've been gone.
Well, I'll take the credit for that. Without me around, like, you know, life just isn't as interesting.
It's true, Bill.
I'm just brain dead, so.
Let me see. I think I did hear one yesterday, which was super funny because I was at work and there's this gal that's like 20 and she listens to reggae, and I was like, "What? Somebody else?"
Reggae is the most awesome music in the world.
Oh, I'm loving it more and more.
Yeah, me too. We didn't like, I didn't even really know reggae, and I certainly didn't think I liked it, and I didn't listen to it. And then we have this friend, Chris Finnegan, who is just adamant. He's like, "Look, reggae's awesome, and I'm going to play it a lot, and you're going to fall in love with it." And you're like, probably not, but we'll give it a shot. And then within like a few weeks of hanging out with him and listening to reggae music, you realize like you used to think reggae was just a bunch of marijuana users,
right,
cannabis users, singing about their use of cannabis. And what I've come to believe is that the reggae crowd, the reggae genre collectively, they're almost awakened, and they've got it figured out how we can all be better to each other.
Oh, yeah. I agree. So the song that I heard yesterday, I don't know if you want to check it out, is called Already Gold by Aeration.
Aeration. Already Gold. So I say we go with it. I haven't heard it yet. I'm going to hear it the first time the rest of the audience hears it. Let's go with Aeration, Almost Gold. Awesome. I'll see you next week, Mikkel.
Sounds good, Bill.
Can't wait. Have fun.
down those dreams. You'll probably find out the hard way. It's not all what it seems. Come back in from the cold. You're playing the game, but you're losing your soul.